The views and opinions expressed in the Distracted Librarians podcast do not necessarily reflect those of Bloomfield Township, Bloomfield Township Public Library, Bloomfield Community Television, the Birmingham Area Cable Board, or its producers or production staff.
Hello and welcome. We're the Distracted Librarians, your friendly neighborhood bookworms who can't resist the siren call of movies, video games, music, and everything else in the pop culture universe.
Think of this podcast as a digital campfire where we share our latest obsessions, analyze the hidden depths of our favorite distractions, and maybe rediscover the joy of reading in between.
So, if you're a fellow media junkie, a book lover, or someone looking for a fun, engaging escape from your daily grind, you've come to the right place.
Sit back, relax, and prepare to get delightfully distracted with us.
Hi, everyone. This is Distracted Librarians, and we are going to talk a little bit today about our quirks and niche interests. All right. Does anybody want to start?
So for context, we should probably say...
Yeah, what does that mean?
What does that mean to us?
All right, that sounds good.
Yeah.
For sure.
Reader quirks and niche interests. So starting with quirks, I think that it's more... What are the little fussy things, I think? Or I say that for myself, mostly fussy. but the little things that you like or don't like or are particular about either in books or audiobooks or any kind of, you know, story, really. Mm-hmm.
I think it's also funny, at least with me, when I'm applying that, like, the word quirks on its own doesn't have any, like, morality context. But yeah. When I'm applying reader quirks to myself... Every single one I think of is negative.
Me too. Yeah.
It is all the things that I hate about myself as a reader.
Yeah.
Or the things that I have to work around in order to enjoy something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the thing. It's not all negative. Some things it makes the process of reading or of finding something to read a little more difficult because you're picky about it, or it's mm-hmm. gotta be a certain way to be something you're gonna vibe with.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Well, for you guys, you know, I know some people, especially, well, readers have different rules in terms of like whether they proceed with the book. Mm-hmm. I know there are people that will read a book from front to end no matter what. Do you guys have any strong feelings about a book if it's not really making it for you?
Learning to DNF a book was one of the greatest things in the world for me. It saved me so much time in terms of just not continuing to read things that I actively hated.
And that's librarian slang for did not finish.
Yes.
Yeah.
I am still on that journey. I can DNF romances now.
Oh,
if I get
okay.
like 30 or 40% into the romance and I've decided I genuinely want one of these characters to be unhappy by the end, or I don't think they deserve happiness.
Okay.
Wow.
Then I will stop the book because I know it's going to lead to a place where they're happy and I don't want that.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair.
So I leave them in the pit.
Nice. Yeah.
I never used to be that way. And then at a certain point, actually fairly early on, because this was a couple of years ago, I was reading this book. I don't even remember what book it was. I was reading it and I'm like, I don't care. There's nothing about this that I care about. I'm wasting my life reading this book.
Sure.
And I just put it back. And that for me, I was like, you're allowed to do that. And yeah, you are. You're allowed to do that. And so now that I have done that like once, it's just like, oh, I'm done. I'm good. Like,
yeah.
I try to get at least like halfway if I can, or at least a third of the way to know, you know, what, or try to identify what I don't like about it. Like, is it the way that it's written? Is it, you know, the language that's used, or is it the story itself? Or is there a character that's driving me crazy? Or why is that? But sometimes I just don't want to psychoanalyze that response. And I'm just like, you know what, this book is not for me, or this movie is not for me, or whatever it is. And that's okay. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the thing or with me. It's just, we're not a match for each other. So,
yeah. I think it's pretty clear that a book that comes around at a certain time, it may not be the right time for that book. And that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that we can't come back to it at mm-hmm. a later time.
Oh yeah.
And it might have relevance at that time.
Sure.
But yeah, certainly I tend to be like 100 pages in. I will give it 100 pages. Mm-hmm. But I've been like wrong about that too, because they're like the Anne Rice books, Lasher, and mm-hmm. I don't even remember what is the Mayfair Witches trilogy
I
or series
so,
of books.
Yeah.
That first book is like all about her just so descriptively creating this world, which is fantastic, and it's very Anne Rice, and she does a great job of that. But there was just too much description and not enough action.
Yeah.
And so I would get to that 100 page, and if I had stopped then, I wouldn't have made it through these amazing, wonderful books that are really great. It just, I have to realize that sometimes more patience might be needed. More than 100 pages may be needed.
I definitely find that, like you said, it, sometimes it's just not the right time for that book. So I will, there are ones that it's like, I know I want to read this, but I simply could not the time that I tried to.
Yeah.
I will go back to them on occasion and try to actually finish them. There are a few books that I have, like, stopped reading them at really ridiculous points to stop reading them. Like, there's a few, I've got less than 100 pages left. I could easily finish this book. And I just stop, and I, like, it's been years, and I, like, someday I might finish it.
Yeah.
So would you go back and read the whole thing?
I have no idea.
Or is it just
cross that bridge when we get to it?
I've actually been really bad about that too, where, like, a lot of times if it's a book that is interesting to me but isn't, like, deeply hooking me, and I have to put a bookmark in it because I have to go to bed or I have plans for the next day, I will just never pick it up again. And it's gotten to the point where if it's a book that I know I want to finish, I will save it for a day where I have a dedicated 6 to 8 hours and just plan to read it in the day.
Now, that is something, I'm glad you brought that up, because that is in the front of my mind when I think about my own reader quirks, is that I'm now in a mood where, and I don't know when this started, but if I can't devote, like, a large block of time to the process of reading, I won't read it all, which is weird, but it's just sort of like, no, I'm not going to read 10 pages of this. I want to sit down for, like, 2.5 hours and read this book uninterrupted, and which never happens. And, like,
yeah, I was going to say, if that was what my rule was, I would never read a book again.
And so when we, like, I know you and I do this, Drew, where it's just like, I'm going to read X number of books this year. And set a goal for yourself by, within a year's time, I'm going to read 50 books, 60 books, whatever it is. I'm behind a little bit because of that tendency. Because I'm like, I don't want to be interrupted. I want to enjoy the process of reading. And if I can't do that, I won't do it at all.
And I really don't know when that started for me, because I remember last year I was reading Babel by R.F. Kuang. Phenomenal book.
Yeah.
But it is very dense in terms of the amount of, like, linguistic information that she puts into it. Mm-hmm. And it's very readable too. It's fantastic. But I was dedicated. I'm going to read 2 chapters of this a day. I'm not going to get bogged down in it, but I also can't take, like, strong distance from it or everything will fall apart.
Right.
So I was strict, 2 chapters a day for 16 days, just read it every bit, gave it like 20, 30 minutes a day.
Okay.
So I used to have that ability.
Yeah.
Even as recently as last year. And something about this year, I don't have it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. What happened to us? I don't know.
But I go through phases with that all the time. There's times where it's, I have to be able to sit and read, like, I have to sit and read the whole book or I can't read. But then there are times where it's like, I can do, you know, 10, 20, 30 minutes before I go to bed. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's fine. And it's wild because you'd assume there'd be some sort of rule about, like, what works for what. There isn't. Mm-hmm. It's complete chaos.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's like, yes, this heavy, dense fantasy, I can sit and read it straight through. Sometimes it's, I have to read it in small digestible bites.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And same thing with, you know, light, fluffy romance that is, like, easy to read, very quick to read. Sometimes I simply cannot sit and read it. I have to break it down. And I'm like, why? Why can't I just, I want to sit and read it and I just can't.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm like a very compulsive reader. So, like, if I finish a book that I really enjoyed, then I'm like out trying to find the next great book that's going to, like, make me feel the way the last book made me feel.
Because you have inertia almost.
Oh my gosh. And it's like, it's so hard sometimes because then I find myself like, I'm picking up this book because it feels good to have this book and know that I have this project ahead of me. Mm-hmm. But then when I start diving into it, I'm like, well, maybe I should have really just taken a break, and I didn't take a break.
It's the book hangover.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Which is why buying books is evil sometimes. I'm so glad I work in a library, because otherwise, I know so many people that have just, and I'm sorry, I'm probably talking about some people in this room, but not on purpose, but so many books on their shelves that they haven't read because it feels so good to pick that book up and be like, you are mine.
Look, they're pretty.
Yes.
Feel attacked.
Me too.
The problem was when I got my own apartment and decided that books would be the aesthetic of the place.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. It's a truly beautiful thing.
And now buying a book, I can buy it based on whether I want to read it, or I can also buy it based on this is a pretty cover, or I can also buy it based on my book Rainbow doesn't have enough yellow yet.
Bruce's book Rainbow is stunningly beautiful. Like, mine is good. Drew's is amazing.
Nice.
I have kind of the opposite thing where I'm attracted to objects and books that look like they're cast-offs. So if there's like a dingy paperback, I'm going to buy that one. It's weird because I have a lot of these very beautiful, like special edition, hardcover, like gilded yada yadas. Mm-hmm. But it's like, I want this one with the ripped cover that has like plastic holding it together. I don't know why. It's just, but that's the, I want the dingy thing. It feels good in my hands, you know?
It's lived a life.
Yeah. So for me, I've got a lot of books that like look like that.
Meanwhile, I have an entire shelf of sprayed edges that are edges out. And I'm like, I don't remember which of these books is which book. I have to go in and like look for the one that I'm looking for.
Yes, yes, I have some of those too.
But the pages are so pretty. They're beautiful. I can't. They have to be seen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
absolutely. All right. There was a question I was going to ask, and now I don't remember what.
Well, we were talking about print items, like books in print. What about things like audiobooks or ebooks or any of that?
Yeah. Well, we have talked a little bit before about narrators and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that a narrator could do that will absolutely shut it down for you?
Well, before we were talking about liking horror stories, horror novels, and Grady Hendrix is
amazing.
Amazing.
And so I just read My Best Friend's Exorcism, and I listened to the audiobook of it a couple years ago. It was so odd. The narrator would have this really good, well-acted, very personality-filled dialogue, but then the description, the omniscient narrator, was like Siri reading it to you.
So totally deadpan.
Totally deadpan, odd, like AI voice. Huh. It was such a weird choice. I was like, what? To the point where it would disarm me whenever a character would stop talking and you'd get this like AI type deadpan narration. It was very weird.
That's really weird.
And it almost seemed odd. Like, and it was the same voice, like the same narrator, through the whole book. It wasn't like an ensemble cast, but it was like, how are you switching between this like very well acted and then this very like strange robotic
caffeinated and not caffeinated,
right?
Caffeinated, not caffeinated.
It was so odd. Like, that was really weird.
Huh. Okay.
For me, the thing that turns me off most in an audiobook is when the narrator is someone who like chews on their words and like over enunciates into it and adds emotion to every syllable. I can't do it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a very, very quick talker. I tend to read audiobooks at like 1.25 to 1.5 speed.
Okay.
And when they just linger on the consonants and tell the story in a way that needs to be no.
Well, it's almost like they're standing on a stage.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And then they're like just like leaning into you to tell you something, but in their like best dramatic voice.
Very theatrical.
Yeah, it's kind of silly. It's like, I can't see you. You need to stop doing that.
Yes.
I'm weird with some, there's certain tones of voice or like ways of speaking that hit parts of my brain badly and I can't listen to them. So like, it happens just talking to people sometimes, and in real life I can't just like turn the person off and like walk away. But I can do that with an audiobook, and I have done it, and I'll get narrators where I'm just like, It's the, I'm sure you're a lovely person. I'm sure this is a well-narrated audiobook for so many people. I simply cannot. And I have to find a different way to read the book if I want to keep reading it, because it's, I can't even articulate what those are. It's just something about it hits wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is going to cement my status as the group nerd, but I was listening.
I think we're in a war of that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to plant my flag because I was listening to an audiobook of the Iliad, and which is like 40 hours long.
Yes, of course.
And I went through and I listened to samples of like, who's going to win the person who gets to read me this book? Mm-hmm. And I listened to the narrator because I'm like, I'm going to have to hear you for 40 hours.
Yeah.
Have to. Like, someone's forcing me to do it. Like, but I'm like, okay, whose voice can I tolerate for 40 hours? Like,
okay, but I never thought to do that. And that's brilliant.
Isn't it?
But I made this.
But it's only if they have, you know, 25 different versions of it, right? Because you can't always do that with everything.
And we already established I don't read classics. So.
Right. But it's, so I had my choice of like, a bunch of different readers, but I'm like, I need just the right, like, who am I to like just pick one and go? But I can't.
No, that's too much of an investment.
Yeah,
I don't know. Mm-hmm. My biggest issue is like mouth sounds. And goodness, I hope I'm not making them right now. Mm. But like, imagine NPR, where you have that one person who has a dreamy voice, but you can still hear them like slapping their lips.
The clicking
or the teeth clicking or something. And I'm just like, I can hear entirely too much. Yeah. I am inside of your mouth right now.
The point where the microphone is too good.
Where it's too good, right? Yeah. And we like, can we edit that stuff out? Please edit that stuff out. you know, that will shut me down. Well, I just can't.
Well, when I do my read alouds, for the same thing, I'm like, all right, let's get out all the clicks. Like, it's all of the breathing in or the, you know, the like before someone talks.
Yes.
Mm-mm, no. Yes. Like it's that kind of stuff.
One of my pandemic hobbies that I picked up was this channel on YouTube called Cracking the Cryptic.
Okay.
They do these really like intricate Sudoku solves.
Oh.
Of like the really weird rule sets. Yes. Of like sandwich Sudoku and arrow Sudoku and like all of the weird rule sets. And it's really, really cool. It's these videos with these two British guys where they'll take like 2 hours to solve a Sudoku, and I will be invested in it the entire time. But one of them is exactly that, where every time he opens his mouth, it slaps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
nope.
I have to only listen to the other one now. I can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
A perfect example of the, well, in my opinion, like the absolute majesty of audiobook narration is Stephen Lang's reading of Heart-Shaped Box, which I'm obsessed with Heart-Shaped Box. So I'm going to probably mention it a lot. But Stephen Lang reading Heart-Shaped Box is a transcendent experience, mostly because the way that he will enunciate each part of the word, but not in that aggressively dramatic, and the tone of his voice can stop a migraine. I'm serious. Like, I don't know if it's like just the depth or whatever, but it's a very intense, like spooky, scary, like and in parts like action-packed narrative, but there's just something about the tone of his voice that adds to that ambiance, but it really gives you a very like mellow, calm, like some, and I'm not joking. I've had migraines before and I'm like, I gotta download Heart-Shaped Box again. Mm-hmm. So I can like, I don't know. It's just, it's an absolute perfection of story and the telling of that story. Sure. They really made a good match with him doing that.
Yeah.
He really has the quality.
You're absolutely going to get a message from me asking who's this narrator, because I'm dying. It's going to happen someday.
Just sort of like, this is better than like Tylenol. It's like he can fix your migraine.
Maybe I'm out of Tylenol. I'm out of everything. Yeah. Got to try something.
No, not to worry. Stephen Lang. Like it's, I don't know. It's, but that's my kind of like it. All of those things kind of have to align in order to, you know.
Sure.
But because I'm not really an ebook person. If I have a digital version of a book, it's an audiobook typically.
I've gotten a lot more into ebooks in the last couple of years. I used to be only when I was reading my book club books on desk.
Yes.
Would be the only way that I would deal with ebooks.
Me too.
Yeah.
And in the last year or so, I got a Kindle Unlimited subscription.
Okay.
And obviously those are only available in ebook form. So I've gotten a lot more used to just being at home with my Kindle. Mm-hmm. This has not stopped me from buying all of the physical books on the planet.
Of course.
Every single one.
Yeah. Well, some things just have to be had.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Digital copy is just not good enough.
I think I have another three that come out today.
Wow.
Look, I don't want to talk about the books that I haven't bought yet.
Yep. We have a standing Google Calendar of book releases that we're looking forward to in the next, we keep it updated to 6 months or so. There are at least 60 books on it.
Oh my goodness.
There are days where there's like 7 or 8 books that come out that day that we're both just like, yes, this sounds amazing. I need it. I can't buy 6 books in one day.
May 2nd, 2023 devastated me.
Wait, why?
I will pull up the list.
Oh, please do, because I'm uninitiated into this.
There's a day in April coming up that is, like, for me especially, I'm just like, these hit all of my little niche interests a way.
I'm still reading books where the author's been dead for, like, centuries, and so you can just find it anywhere.
Yeah, like, you can pull it up on the internet and just, you don't even have to pay for it.
I know, it's just sort of like, so I'm like,
it's been in the public domain for so long that nobody cares about it anymore.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so May 2nd, 2023, Ander and Santi were here. Best Men, Dragonfall, I Like Me Better, The Sun and the Star, The Thorns Remain, and the U.S. release of Solitaire all came out.
On the same day?
On the same day. May 2023, everything in purple is books that I wanted to buy.
Mm. You have a whole calendar.
Yeah. I do.
It's a shared calendar.
You have a shared calendar, both of you. Wow.
Yes.
Look at how organized you are.
We were roommates and we didn't have a shared calendar then. Now we have a shared book calendar.
It's priorities.
We didn't have a calendar because I could shout across the house at you.
Exactly.
That's true.
So, okay, well, let's talk about our niche interests.
Yeah.
Because I think that's a good segue into that. I mean, clearly. Clearly we have some ideas about what the things that we like.
Feeling a little judged.
All right. Well, who wants to start? What do we like?
I mentioned it briefly in the previous episode, but I tend to stick very much into the queer spaces of books that come out. If I'm picking up something for myself, it is a 98% certainty that there will be a queer subplot or interest or some element of it. And I'll bounce across every genre for it, into the fantasy, into the romance, into the historical, into the nonfiction.
Well, I was reading, I remember I messaged you and I said, I need a good book that's going to make me feel feelings, but good feelings. And you were like, oh, you want to read Legends and Lattes. And I was like, great, cool, thank you.
Oh, I keep looking at that book.
It's so good.
Read it. Halfway, the prequel comes out.
I know. I'm so excited. And then halfway through, I'm like, okay, I don't want to put pressure on them, but I want so-and-so and so-and-so to get together. Mm-hmm. And Drew was like, oh, that's so interesting. I wonder if that will happen by the end. I guess you'll have to read it to find out. But it was, so you're really, really good for, like, good recommendations along that line. Mm-hmm. This is like, there's the one person I know to go to, and that's you.
Oh, nice.
And that's made
what a wonderful compliment.
I do love that. And it's made it fun for reference interviews with patrons, too.
Yeah.
Because, they'll ask for any sort of genre, and it's like, well, yes, I have 2 or 3 recommendations for that. How do you feel about queer books?
Right.
Like, is this a boundary for you? Mm-hmm. And there have been a couple of people who are like, yeah, that's not really something that I'm interested in. And I'm like, okay, my coworker is over there.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing where someone came up to me and was like, have you read any good, like, adaptations of Greek mythology? And I was like, yes, yes, I have.
We've got it.
Yes, yeah. I've read almost every single one in this building. Like, it's really fun when you get that, like, the thing that speaks to you is just like, my time has come. I'm the person to talk to. Like,
it's, yes, absolutely. But, and so Killian and I work with kids' books, but we also read adult books, clearly, or other age groups and things like that. So, I think, like, our time is probably strained in some ways, mm-hmm, because expected to read a certain amount of kids' books. Mm-hmm. But then we also like to have fun and do things for ourselves. So, mm-hmm, I don't know about you, but do you have any rules about, like, do you read a kids' book and then an adult book or a teen book? Or do you just kind of fly by the seat of your pants?
I don't do structure. So I don't have rules. It's more of what speaks to me when. And my thing is, like I said in the previous episode, I tend to gravitate towards fantasy or towards mythology adaptations. And there's so many. If you're a person who can do mythology adaptations that aren't necessarily the most faithful.
So people other than myself.
There's, and even some of them are pretty faithful.
Oh, yeah.
There's some really great middle grade adaptations that came out of the Percy, like the height of the Percy. We might even still be in the height of the Percy Jackson era. Let's be real.
Yeah.
TV shows coming out. There's so much going on with it. But so much has come out of that, including the required in creating his own imprint within mm-hmm. Disney of mythology adaptations that are told by people from the cultures that it's drawn from. And those are so good.
I love that.
And just there's so much good middle grade fantasy out there that I don't necessarily feel like I'm missing out when I'm reading that.
Okay. Right.
Which is why there's a lot of times when people on the desk, it's, you know, someone who is between like 9 and 13 comes in looking for fantasy recommendations. They're like, Killian, do you just want to take this? And I was like, yes, I do.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, generally I will read a children's book or middle grade book, that kind of thing, and then I try to read a grown-up book for me, and then I try to read a nonfiction grown-up book, and then I go back to kids. That's my general, like, that's how I try to do things. It doesn't always work out that way, because I'm also one of those weird people that reads 2 to 3 books at a time. So we just see how it goes.
Take a look at my Goodreads currently reading shelf at some point. Okay. It's ridiculous. It's out of control all the time.
Oh, yeah. I've got a bunch that are just sitting up there, too, that I'm like, I'm technically reading this.
I have an audiobook in the car, and then I have a physical book that I carry around with me, and then I have an ebook that I'm reading on the desk at work from time to time when I'm trying to catch up on things.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's...
I have an upstairs book and a downstairs book.
Oh my goodness. All right.
Because if I'm upstairs, I don't want to go get the one from downstairs. It's so far away. I don't do well with stairs. I'm not coordinated. And so it's just best to avoid them when possible.
All right. Niche? Do we have any more niche stuff?
This is I think my parting comment on my end of the niche thing is, I joke about this with you all the time, that I only, when people come to the desk, like, do you have a good recommendation for historical fiction or romance or whatever, it's like, I only read books about ghost murder. And which is obviously not a genre, but it's speaks to that when we're talking about reader interest and things, that you gravitate towards the same sort of stuff. And I think that a lot of us have said, like, that as a blanket statement, sometimes a reference interview could be a very difficult question. Like, do you have a recommendation for a book? Do you have a, you know, like you were saying earlier, like, what is your hard line about, you know, what you're interested in? It can be really difficult, because when you, as a reader, it's like, yeah, we're librarians, but like you said, you want to read a, you know, a nonfiction, a children's book, you know, all of those things, try to get all of your, you know, cover all of your bases. It can be really hard to balance that with your own tendencies and interests as a reader, because we're people too. Like, it's, you know, it's not just that, and we don't really have as much time to read for pleasure on our own as people would expect, maybe. So balancing being aware of, you know, current trends and new publications and all of that with our own interests, and like you've said before, Nicole, you don't always have a lot of time to read for pleasure,
for sure.
And so it's that can be really difficult.
I have to imagine that's even harder on the kid's side, because
it would have to be.
You're balancing where they are in their reading ability, them probably not having a deeper interest or wealth of books to pull from, balancing the parents' opinions.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Parents' opinions can be a big obstacle sometimes. We get people who will come in, and I know Nicole and I both really like graphic novels. We see a lot of people who, I don't like graphic novels. I don't want my kid reading graphic novels. And like, there's reasons for that. There's a time and place for that. But it's also, you want to defend your favorites so bad.
Well, and I think you want to defend the idea that it's not a comic book. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with a comic book. No, but I think that a lot of people are like, well, I want my so-and-so, or I want myself to, you know, read a real book. And I get what people mean, and I'm not, you know, questioning that desire. But I think that graphic novels in particular, just as an example, mm-hmm. is a very difficult, like, needle to thread to make to share what that actually means.
I do a lot of reminding people graphic novels and comic books tend to have a much higher vocabulary even than general mm-hmm. adult fiction.
Yeah.
And it's a different type of literacy, being able to fuse graphic information with textual information. Mm-hmm. And that's a really important skill to develop, and not everybody has it. So there's definitely benefits that you simply can't get from the so-called real books.
Yeah, well, I think, and some parents just consider graphic novels to be like training wheels for regular books. Like,
yes.
Oh, well, it can't possibly be as, you know, fulfilling or educational or blah, blah, blah as other, you know, fiction or other things. And I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I have to imagine if they put it in the same path as like picture books to beginning to read books to chapter books, mm-hmm. where then they feel like graphic novels are a step backwards.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah. But then, so that's the thing. And I guess, you know, something that I would like to invite everybody to do is to pick up a graphic novel and read it so that you can actually see that there's definitely some merit and some benefit there. Because I think sometimes the people that have the most idea about something aren't necessarily the most well, or as they're not as experienced with that particular thing.
Yeah.
You mean they haven't hyper-focused researched on it?
Right, right. They haven't read 5,000 graphic novels in the past year like I have. Right, but
they didn't take that like graphic novels class in undergrad or then in grad school.
Oh, we didn't have that when I was...
I was able to have an image and text class when I was doing my MA. Yeah.
Amazing.
And my instructor actually was he's a graphic novel artist himself, in addition to being a professor. And so that was really cool to learn more about the narrative structure of the marriage of image and text, mm-hmm. and how those two things collaborate to tell that story.
Sure.
It was like a mind-blowing idea. Really cool.
Well, it sounds like we need to have an episode about graphic novels.
Yes, absolutely. I would love that. We should. That would be really fun.
And I think that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Distracted Librarians.
If you have any questions or suggestions, feel free to reach out to us at distracted@btpl.org.
Until then, keep those pages turning and those screens lighting up.
We'll catch you in the next episode.